Hey everyone, it's the Kung Fu Genius, aka Alex Richter, and I just want to let you know that if you're a Wing Chun practitioner, especially from the WT or Leung Ting line, and you want to get really personalized intensive private training with me, you can now apply to do an immersion course with me here in NYC, or if you like the sun, in my Florida home near Orlando. These courses are for instructors or anyone who's serious about learning the art in detail and working hard. I teach in program blocks like Siunam Tao, Chum Kyu, Biu Chi, and Wooden Dummy, and those include the Chi Sao Theory, fighting applications, and training methods as well. If you're really serious about learning Wing Chun, check out the link in the description below to find out about applying for a spot. And while you're here, don't forget to subscribe to the Kung Fu Genius on YouTube, like this video, and share it on your social media platforms. And with that, let's get started.
All right, peeps, on today's episode of the Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems. Lots of William Chung in Kansas. Lots of, you know, that Yip Man quote is from Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, right? Let's get to it.
He is unstoppable, unbeatable, unbelievable. He's Alex Richter, the Kung Fu Genius.
And every day, I practice martial arts. What's up?
Word is, I'm a Kung Fu Genius.
Yo, Dre, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good, Sifu. It's, what is it today? Like a holiday or something, right?
Today's Valentine's
Day. Valentine.
Yeah.
I'm feeling saucy.
Hallmark Day.
I'm feeling extra saucy and sexy.
I think you're going to say it's sexist.
I'm feeling so sexist right now. Yeah.
Excellent. So here we are. We had our crazy Jean LaBelle episode last week.
Yeah.
So now we're back to technically still an AMA, but I ended up talking about the Judo Gene stuff for close to an hour.
Okay.
So let's give people what they're here for, which is really the hot nonsense from YouTube.
Uh-huh. Hot nonsense. Let's start it off. We're going right into it.
Let's go.
Okay. So Wolf 3001.
Ah, because 3,000 other wolves were already taken.
Already taken. Always. Usually the case with me too, you know. When I got into Wing Chun and started reading all the stuff about Leung Ting and William Chun.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Oh, yeah.
1986 called and wants its talking point back.
It got me interested in seeing what other Wing Chun systems were doing. Coming from a William Chun school, I heard a lot of shit talking about modified Wing Chun.
Oh.
Okay.
Ooh.
A lot of it.
Uh-huh.
I always thought it was obvious who was teaching modified Wing Chun, but I kept my mouth shut. It's always seemed to me that there is a lot of issues with Yip Man students. These videos have been a big help. There is a lot of stuff I don't think many people know about or know because we don't have access to these circles. My Sifu had to go to Australia to learn, and I trained on like two, maybe three occasions with William Chung in Kansas.
Oh, in Kansas?
In Kansas.
All right.
I was just thinking, KFG, have you seen Chung's book on my life with Wing Chun? In his book, he has some letters from Bruce Lee. If I remember correctly, I'm going to have to look again, but I'm wondering if these are authentic letters. I have heard.
Whoa.
I'm still going.
I'm taking notes already.
I have heard that supposedly Bruce Lee thought highly of William Chung, but I'm wondering if this is really true.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there.
Not really that much.
Yeah, he said a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of things that he kind of, I think, wants me to talk about. This is the problem with Wing Chun in general. There are a couple longstanding feuds, I suppose, within the Wing Chun world. One with my former teacher, Leung Ting, and the aforementioned William Chung, and as well. It's not the only feud within the Wing Chun world, but it's probably one of the most publicized because all things kind of came to a head with Yi Min Bo Stepe back in 1986, I think, in September 86. Mm. And so people still talk about this stuff. Now, as someone who's been doing Wing Chun for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've been through all of these discussions and I've read all this stuff. And in the early days of the internet, when people were relitigating this stuff, a member a couple episodes ago, someone asked if I had Bruce Lee fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
I have fatigue on this whole William Chung, Leung Ting thing and all this kind of stuff because I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about William Chung. And that's not a...
Well,
I'm not saying that as a diss to him. No, you know why? Because I already did already. I've gone through all those mental exercises. I've read his books. I watched his videos. I've met with people who've trained with him, and I gave his story a fair shot, and I have a lot of friends in the William Chung lineage, right? But it's just not for me. That style of Wing Chun doesn't get me excited in the morning. Let's put it to you that way. And that's fine, all right? But I also, in terms of like the history and the politics, I've been kind of done with that for the greater part of 20 years. Like I don't care, all right? So it's just so funny because people keep asking me about something that I stopped giving a shit about 20 years ago.
Mm.
So I feel like I always have to pull from the deepest parts of my...
When you first found out about it.
No. I just have to... No, it's like I have to go back into a file cabinet in my head that is rusty and full of cobwebs and go, what are my thoughts on this thing that I have not thought about for 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something that I'm, that I think that much about, right? William Chung has come up on the podcast a number of times. And of course, these are all kind of sensitive political issues for some people because obviously the students who follow William Chung believe in William Chung's story about his Wing Chun being the authentic traditional one from Leung Chun and everyone else essentially doing some fake created on the fly Wing Chun that is known as modified Wing Chun. But as I mentioned on a recent podcast, this dichotomy of traditional and modified, these are terms William Chung made up. And we are under no obligation to acknowledge them as legitimate terms, right? Because no one outside of William Chung's lineage divides Wing Chun this way. And if you go into the other lineages in Fatsan, the older lineages, if you go way back to Leung Chan's Wing Chun that he taught in Gulo Village, it does not look like William Chung's Wing Chun. It looks much more like what everyone else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I feel about it. I have no problem with William Chung teaching what he teaches. I have no problem with his students doing what they're doing. It doesn't bother me at all. What I don't understand is why people get so bent out of shape that other people are doing something different. All right? If someone does something different and it's not the same as what you do, well, fine. You let them do that. They're not your students anyway. There's this weird thing in Wing Chun that they look at like, oh, look how these guys are stepping. Look how these guys are. I'm like, why do you even care?
Mm.
Shouldn't you be focused on your own students and improving your skills and things like that and worried about maybe how to deal with a boxer or a wrestler and not so worried that these guys put their feet this way and these guys put their feet, like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you would have to pay me a lot of cash money to even pretend to care, let alone actually care about any of this stuff. So I have to preface my answer with, I don't actually care. Literally anything I'm going to say right now is unemotional and I don't care, okay? But I have to say that because there's always this assumption, oh, I used to learn from Leung Ting that I have to hate William Chung or something. I'm incredibly neutral about William Chung in that he does not really factor in to much of what I think about on a regular basis, all right? William Chung has come up a few times with my... with my now late friend, Sifu Chan Chiman, who just unfortunately passed away last week. Because Chan Chiman, when he was young, he was essentially convinced to do Wing Chun because he had a kind of a friendly sparring match with William Chung and William Chung beat him up. And William Chung at that time, when he was learning from Grandmaster Yip Man, you know, obviously he was very young at that time, but he was also bigger than a lot of the other guys. So he was kind of like the big guy in the class, and he was an aggressive fighter. He got into street fights, and he was someone, even according to Chan Chiman, who was very willing to fight for little to no reason. He he didn't need a lot of goading to get into a fight at that time, right? Now, that's okay if you think, okay, that's the temperament of a teenager who's learning this fighting art, right? I don't know if that's always the same thing you want to look at as someone gets older. Now, I'm not saying William Cheung was still the same guy as he got older, but I'm just saying, like, that's something that you hope people eventually mature out of at some point, right? So William Cheung had an older brother who learned Wing Chun also from Grandmaster Yip Man, but a lot more low-key. And later I even talked about him, that he had married the Shaw Brothers starlet Lei Kui On, who also learned some knives from Grandmaster Yip Man. So William Cheung was a good fighter. Recently I read in the new book about Wong Sun Leung that was published by Wing Chun Illustrated, where they took all of Wong Sun Leung's students and they all kind of talked about, they kind of all answered the same 10, 20 questions or something like that, but from different perspectives, right? All these legit original students of Wong Sun Leung basically answered the same 10 questions or 15, however many questions. And their answers were all different, right? Which also shows you the subjective nature of learning from a Wing Chun Sifu. But one of the things that came out is that Wong Sun Leung famously went to Taiwan for a fighting contest, which he unfortunately lost, kind of on a technicality, or maybe he got kicked or whatever. That's an episode on its own I could talk about. But Wong Sun Leung ended up going by himself, and there were other people who were supposed to go with him to fight. William Cheung was one of them. And I believe Yip Bo Ching was the other one. And they ended up not coming. So I would like to know why William Cheung ended up not going. And Wong Sun Leung was basically stuck as the only one going. Because there was even a newspaper article. There were four students of Grandmaster Yip Man who were supposed to go to Taiwan to fight. One being Wong Sun Leung. One being Yip Bo Ching. One being William Cheung. And the fourth one, I don't remember his name, unfortunately, right now. I don't know if he was that famous. But Wong Sun Leung ended up going by himself, right? So you know, the one time I think when they would have a chance to have an open contest, William Cheung wasn't there. Now, that's not throwing shade at him or whatever. I'm just saying that's an interesting story. I want to know, why did he end up not going? Did he not agree to the rule set or whatever? I mean, for me, if there were a few classmates and we have to go and fight in another country, I'm not going to go, oh, well, you just go by yourself. So I'm curious what the story was, why he ended up not going, right? There has to be something there, right? So William Cheung's a good fighter and tough guy, whatever. He eventually moves to Australia to go to study. And, you know, he knew Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee was very impressed with him, right? And I think, and again, this is, I'm saying this like I literally don't care, all right? Like, this is not emotional or anything like that. But I think sometimes people put a lot of stock in Bruce Lee being very praiseworthy of him, but you have to realize this is someone he knew when he was 15, 16, 17 years old, all right? I'm sure you could go back into your mind's eye and think about who are the people that impressed the shit out of you when you were 17, all right? And if you could go in a time machine and go back and see these same people.
Bruce Lee.
I don't know. No, I mean people you know. Like people that, like, they were actually in your circle or whatever. Someone in high school is maybe a year older that you just thought was the shit, right?
Yeah.
If you could go back in time and look at that person, you'd be like, what? This kid, like, what? Like,
yeah.
This guy's not quite the guy that I remember him being, right? So I think there's a lot of emphasis placed on what a teenage Bruce Lee thought about another teenager, right? They did share letters. I believe those letters are absolutely legit. Bruce Lee was a prolific letter writer, as we recently found out last year. Perhaps more prolific than we thought. Bob, send more coke, all right? But no, I mean, there's no reason to believe those letters from William Cheung are faked or anything like that. One of the letters, though, I forget which one it is, Bruce Lee did, I'm not going to say he got into it with William Cheung, but there was like a letter where he was basically saying, like, I think they had a miscommunication at that time. William Cheung was in Australia. Bruce was obviously in the States. And I think Bruce was telling William Cheung about how he's starting to develop Jeet Kune Do. And then there was some misunderstanding. And then Bruce said something like, oh, I'm not asking your permission to do this. I have to go back and read the letter, and it's been a very long time. Like I said, this is all rusty file cabinet stuff in the back, and it's dusty and it's full of cobwebs, right? So, you know, I mean, like, people want to practice William Cheung Wing Chun, and that's what they like, and that's what brings them joy. And I literally don't care. All right. Like, it doesn't matter. I just think that, you know, this idea that anyone has to adhere to these two terms of modified or traditional, absolutely not. These are things that only exist in the William Cheung universe. And if you're not in that universe, you're under no obligation to divide Wing Chun into these kind of things, into these two categories. Outside of that, the only one thing I think is strange is that, and this is a problem sometimes, I think, in the old days, they didn't take as many photos as they did nowadays, although Bruce Lee actually had a number of photos, is that William Cheung seems to have fabricated a photo with Bruce Lee. And
okay.
I don't know why he did that. All right. Because I don't think anyone disputes William Cheung and Bruce Lee's relationship. I mean, Bruce Lee wrote about William Cheung and wrote to William Cheung and told Dan Inosanto all about William Cheung and all of the early students of Bruce Lee in Seattle, like Jesse Glover, all these guys knew about William Cheung because when Bruce came over and he was teaching them, he's telling them about these guys back in Hong Kong that were good fighters and that he was training with. And it was Wong Sun-leung and William Cheung. These were the guys that came up. So Jesse Glover in his book, Bruce Lee Between Wing Chun and Jeet Kune Do, which he self-published back in the 70s, he talks all about William Cheung and Wong Sun-leung in those books because Bruce was talking about them all the time. So I don't think that there's any dispute that Bruce and William Cheung were friends or knew each other or were training partners or that Bruce thought he was a great fighter at some point in his life. But I think William Cheung just didn't actually have a photo of himself with Bruce Lee. So he took a photo from a family photo of Bruce Lee where he's next to his sister, and he just kind of copied and pasted himself on there and created a photo. So I don't know why he did that. Maybe just because he didn't have a photo, and it's kind of like the photo is fake, but not the relationship, right? Mm. So maybe that's why he did it. I have no idea, but it's clearly not the photo's not real. I mean, I can show you the family photo it comes from. I can even show you the copy that it comes from because it has the same discoloration and the same point. So it's like he took a physical photo and did it. So, but you know, Leung Tang also has some questionable photos in his portfolio as well.
Okay.
So you know, I guess it's just a thing. So you know, anyway, that's all I gotta say about that.
That's all I gotta say about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was a short episode.
Okay, that's all I gotta say about that topic.
That topic.
All right.
Oh, okay. No.
I hope I don't keep
hot topics.
I hope I don't keep getting questions about that because I really don't care.
All right. I think Mel Regalario.
All right.
has a question.
Okay.
There's a YouTube video of Leung Tang.
Oh no.
On CGTV.
CCTV. Or CGTV?
CGTV.
Oh, because they CCTV, like close.
Yeah.
Close circuit.
Close circuit, right.
like a security cam footage.
All right. And in this video, calling him the Wing Chun King.
Uh-huh.
So there's a good possibility I'm going to be one of the last students to learn from Sigong Wai Hong. Maybe when I complete my training, I should call myself Tiger King.
Because it's tiger style, that's why.
Uh-huh. Anyways, have you ever discussed or had any thoughts about Master Wong?
Well, that was all over the place. What was that?
That escalated quickly.
That was weird.
Right,
well,
yeah.
Let me see. Well, first of all, I mean, I know the video he's talking about is what in mainland China was a video with Sifu Leung Tang. And they called him the Wing Chun King. But again, that's... the media outlet calls him that, all right? It's the same thing like the successor event back in the 70s. Leung Tang said he was the head of the whole Wing Chun style. No. The newspaper put that in the title of the headline, right? The newspaper that was actually against Leung Tang put that in the headline, right? He never called himself that. So it's the same thing like, oh, he called himself the king of Wing Chun. No, man. This company did a report on him, and that's the title that they gave it, right? This, you know... they use hyperbole in these kind of things, mm-hmm. right? But again, Leung Tang, and again, it's not easy to defend him because he doesn't do a good job sometimes, but sometimes it's like, come on, dude, take it easy.
That's where that saying comes from. Don't believe the hype.
Yes. Don't
believe the hyperbole.
Don't believe the hyperbole.
That's what it's short for.
Yes, yes, yes. But anyway, well, congrats if you're actually going to be the last private student of of Sifu Wai Hong. He's kind of...
Who's Wai Hong?
Wai Hong is one of the OGs of martial arts here in New York City.
Okay.
So he teaches the Black Tiger style, and mm-hmm. most of, a few of the very famous Sifus in New York come from him. Sifu Paul Ko, who teaches the Bo Law, that's the name of his association, who's a fantastic martial artist. He's from that line, and his Sifu... Tatwa Eng is one of Wai Hong's students. So, I mean, Wai Hong is kind of like a bit of a godfather of Chinatown, one of the original guys to start teaching martial arts back in the day. He's kind of one of the pillars of Chinese Kung Fu in New York City. Also, very interesting story concerning my man Tang Sang.
Oh.
So, at one point when Tang Sang knew that the police in Hong Kong were probably going to start investigating him for his...
Yeah.
Former life as a police detective, he was looking around for places to move to get out of Dodge, to get out of Hong Kong. And one of the places that Tang Sang came to was New York City.
Oh.
Which is funny because I would like, you know, you think of alternate universe. I want to live in the universe where Tang Sang moved to New York and stayed here. How badass would that be? Okay. So Tang Sang obviously had a lot of power and prestige in Hong Kong because he was a high-ranking detective, one of the so-called millionaire detectives. He was friends with Loi Lok and was very wealthy and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, when the ICAC was formed, they were coming after him. They were investigating him. So the story was, and Takwa Eng told me this story because I was asking him if he had knew Tang Sang, and he met Tang Sang and told me a story about Wai Hong and Tang Sang. Tang Sang came to New York. He did some tournament refereeing because Tang Sang loved martial art tournaments. He loved watching fights. And so he would referee. I showed you some old photos in Hong Kong where he was refereeing some full contact bouts. Mm-hmm. And he came over here and did some refereeing as well just because he loved it. He was a martial arts fight fan.
Mm-hmm.
And the story was Tang Sang was in New York Chinatown by himself. Now, this is Chinatown in the 70s. Okay.
Okay.
And he was by himself. But the thing is that Tang Sang's image is kind of all over the newspapers because he's very famous and he was being investigated. And apparently he walks into a restaurant in Chinatown and some local kind of New York level Chinese gangsters see him. And they know that he's wealthy and he's not in his protected area. And they all basically surround his table. And they're like, what? You're not leaving unless you give us some money. Because they know, man, I got all the stories, man. because Tang Sang's got all the money.
Yeah.
They know he's got money. And he's not in an area where he's protected. It's like his Hong Kong street cred is not worth anything in New York Chinatown in the 70s.
What?
And so, or at least I assume it's the 70s. It's possible this also could have happened later in the 80s. Maybe after time. Well, the thing is that Tang Sang fled to Taiwan, I believe, at the beginning of 1977. So I only say New York because I assume he tried out New York before he settled on Taiwan. But I could actually be totally wrong on that. He might have just gone to Taiwan right away and then later decided maybe I'll go to New York afterwards. So this could also be in the 80s. I have to double check my notes. All right. Mm-hmm. So 70s, 80s. You know, for most of our listeners, a long ass time ago. All right. And as he was about to be basically shaken down by these, Wai Hong walks in. And everyone in New York respects Wai Hong because he's like an OG. And Wai Hong comes in and tells those guys like, hey, leave him alone. And they leave. All right. So that gives you an idea about who Wai Hong is, all right?
What?
Yeah, this is no joke, all right?
What?
So, So to be one of the last private students of Wai Hong is huge, right?
And
that's really great, yeah. But I don't know if you want to call yourself the Tiger King. Master Wong, I don't have any comment on him. He's a clown. All right, let's go.
Oh, that's a comment.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a comment,
Was it?
One comment.
That was a parting jab. That's like when you throw someone down a well, then you throw a rock.
No comment. He's a clown.
He's a clown. He's just a clown. But you know what? He knows how to monetize himself. He knows how to be big on YouTube. He's doing all the things you got to do to be that guy or whatever. But I mean, no serious Wing Chun people are going like, what's Master Wong's take on Pak Sao? Like, no one cares. Like, he's just an entertainer.
Ah.
Master Wong is precisely why I won't move back to the UK.
Yes.
He's from the UK. Mm-hmm. He's from your block.
I heard.
All right. Let's move it along. Oh, all right. Man. Let's not spend so much time talking about this. No. Let's not spend any time talking about it. He has enough press. Let's dive. All right.
All right. All right. Next up, we got CT Leffler.
CT Leffler in the house.
Yeah. Okay. Love the show, Seagong.
Awesome. Oh, he's a student. Grand student.
Uh-huh. All right.
Called me Grandpap, so I feel old now.
Grandpappy.
Granddaddy.
Granddaddy. Granddaddy. All right. When a new student comes to your school, what mental and physical characteristics indicate to you that they will be a good WT practitioner? Can you tell when Dre was a... No, I'm just, can you tell from the first lesson if they will be successful?
No, you can't. Mm-hmm. All right. And the problem is that when it comes to these kind of ideas, like, okay, what characteristics does someone have that's going to be a high achiever in your school or in Wing Chun? Mm-hmm. It's kind of confirmation bias.
Mm.
Because you kind of look at the things that you think are the right things, and then you find the students who have that, and you go, see, they have it. Maybe ignoring the fact that some of your senior students are a little bit different and not quite like that. Mm-hmm. The problem is that in the early days of my, or I shouldn't say the problem, I said the observation is in the early days of my school, I thought I knew that.
Yeah.
That if someone came in, they had a certain attitude, a certain way of doing things, they were going to do well. Because I only had a few students at that time, and so my pool of experience was very small.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some 20 years later,
mm-hmm.
if you ask me 15 years ago, I'd be like, all right, if a student is like this, this, and this, they will achieve. If you ask me now, I go, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I've been surprised more times than I can tell you. All yeah. right. I've had students come in for an intro lesson, and it looks like they're absolutely hating it. They're like, they have two left feet, and it's like, why am I even here? They end up joining and end up being really, really super into it.
And they're still here.
Yeah. And still here.
Yeah.
And you have people who are like super enthusiastic during the intro and like they don't even join.
Mm.
Okay. So first of all, you already have that where it's like our gauge on this kind of stuff is off. All right. Because you really don't know. Obviously, there has to be some kind of intersection of some basic physical talent. All right. Like, so someone who is completely uncoordinated can still get good, but they have to have a way, way, way stronger work ethic to make up for that gap.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if you put a gun to my head and you force me to answer this question with a solid answer, I would say it's people who are average talent, but slightly above average work ethic. Slightly above to exceeding like very high work ethic, right? Because it's really the work ethic and the sweat equity you put in that determines whether you're going to achieve. It's not really the physical talent. Although I would say that if someone is average talent in terms of coordination, they have a better chance, right? I will tell you one thing. The students I've been most disappointed in have been the most talented.
Mm.
Because sometimes people come into your school and you show them something and they can do it right away. They pick it up right away. And stuff that you go back through your mind's eye and you go, man, it took me much longer to figure this thing out than it took this student, right? And you just go, wow, where would I be now if I had this student's level of talent?
Mm.
But unfortunately, that student often doesn't stick around. And I don't know if it's because they're so uber talented that they get bored because everything is so easy for them. Or they simply, because they're talented, they haven't had to develop that drive and work ethic to do it. If you're not really understanding how to do a Wing Chun punch well, you have to have that drive to stand in front of a wall bag and just drill out reps and reps and get that timing down with the elbow and the bottom three knuckles and listen to how that sounds and how do you connect and how do you feel and practice and do it again and again, like to be slightly obsessed about everything you do. You see your form in the mirror and you go, there's something a little bit wrong, and you look at the way your teacher does it and you try to copy it and you're constantly putting in this extra work to make things better. Mm-hmm. The student that has that kind of mind will usually do well. The student that thinks they've done this unum tau form once and they got it already, probably not. And the most talented students who have no work ethic will always disappoint you.
Mm.
My you know, people ask me like, oh, what, you know, if someone's not very coordinated or whatever, does it bother you, right? And I go, no, as long as they try hard, I'm happy. The students that have broken my heart have been the most talented who had no work ethic. Because I look at them and, you know, maybe they're not only talented, but maybe physically they have attributes, right? They have a good body. They're athletic. They can move well. They're flexible, right? Mm. They're obviously smart. They have physical intelligence. They have emotional intelligence. And you look at them, you go like, well, what a specimen. You sometimes go like, wow, how much better I would be at Wing Chun if I had that person's attributes, right? And they're always lazy and they always break your heart.
Because it comes so easy.
Because it comes so easy and they just don't have that extra drive to put it in there.
Mm. Yeah, we see youth is wasted on the young in 20 years' time when they don't have those attributes and they look back and they're going to be like, oh, well, I was able to do that. It's like, but you can't do it anymore because you were
Are they always 15. Young?
No, but well, it doesn't matter. It's just, it's always the same thing. Ultimately, martial arts, not just Chinese kung fu, but it is a matter, to be good at it is a matter of kung fu, your achievement through time and effort, right? Mm-hmm. And without that, you can't shortchange it. You got to put in the time. And if you're talented and you put in the time, I mean, that's like where you look at the intersection of a high level talent and work ethic is when you see people like Michael Jordan, Michael Jackson, where you see that intersection.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is when you see something.
Michael
really
Tyson.
Phenomenal. Michael Tyson. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. He just called him Michael Tyson.
Well, that's his name. That Michael Gerard.
Michael
right.
Tyson.
All right.
Tyson.
Okay.
And Tyson.
All right. Let's go for the next one.
He's so enticing on Valentine's Day.
I'm looking behind me.
Oh, shit.
All right, next question.
All right, next up, we got Luis Cruz.
All right.
Sifu Richter, if you had the opportunity to speak with Linda Lee and could ask her anything, what would you ask her?
You can only ask her one thing?
Just one thing, man. Anything. Anything, though.
No, my brain doesn't work that way. This is a question I can't answer.
Mm.
If I had the chance to sit down and talk to Linda Lee, I would have tons of stuff I want to talk to her about. I want to talk to her about like the early days, struggling, leaving Seattle, going to Oakland. I want to talk about the Wong Jack Man fight. I want to talk about the struggles he had post Green Hornet and his school and his students and who learned what. I want to talk about their time in Hong Kong. There's so much I want to talk about.
Hmm.
I'd like ask one question.
One and done.
No, no. Nope. That would be very dissatisfying. If I could only ask her one question, then I would just ask some silly bubblegum question or whatever, like, you know.
What's your shoe size?
No, I mean, like, you know, I don't... That's not how my brain works. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows that I go knee deep in everything I do, right? And like, what is one question going to tell you?
Mm-mm.
What is one answer going to give? There's not enough insight in something like that.
I guess maybe it's not just one question. Maybe it's if you had the opportunity to speak with Linda Lee.
Yeah.
Speak.
Yeah.
With Linda Lee. Over coffee.
There would be a whole wide range of questions.
Coffee.
I'm particularly fascinated about his time in Hong Kong, although I know that for Linda, that was not a very happy time in her life because, you know, she's not living in her country anymore. She's living in Hong Kong. Bruce is becoming a big star. He's got to work a lot. I know that wasn't a happy time for her, but I have a lot of questions just about things that went on during that time and things that he did, and not the salacious stuff. Like I want to know things about like his training schedule, when he was shooting things, all sorts of stuff like that. But I mean, she's there. She knows all the stuff. I would ask her about certain personalities in Bruce Lee's life, maybe people who later went on to claim certain things or whatever. I would ask her what Phuc Yeung's real relationship with Bruce Lee was beyond the hyperbole of him teaching him all this stuff or whatever, like what was really going
on. Don't believe the hype.
Yeah. So, man, deep conversations. This is all I want. I don't want nothing superficial. Hey, Kung Fu Genius listeners, are you a fan of Wing Chun Kung Fu? Well, if you listen to me, I assume you are. I got great news for KFG fans. Right now, you can get an all-access one-month free trial subscription to Wing Chun Illustrated Magazine. Yes, I said free. Go to WCINewsstand.com and register in the upper right-hand corner, fill out your email and password, and use the code KFGTRIAL to get your free trial to all the issues from 2011 to the current issue. That's right, all the issues, even the one with this cool guy on the cover. That's me for those of you listening to us on audio. My Kung Fu Genius column is also in all the new issues, as if you needed another reason to get this awesome magazine. Go get your free trial subscription today. For all that information, check out the description below. And now back to me.
Yeah. Nice. Good question. All right. Next up. Mm-hmm. We got Wing Chun in application.
All right.
What is your favorite part about being a business owner in New York?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Do you have a favorite thing?
That makes a huge assumption that I would not rather be a business owner anywhere else.
Yeah.
Being a business owner in New York is a pain in the ass. All right? It's a pain in the ass. It's ridiculously expensive here.
Woo.
It's ridiculously hard to do anything here. So the one thing I will say about what I love about teaching in New York is the people that come to train with us. And because this is, you know, New York is obviously one of the most famous world cities, and the people who come to a city like New York, I mean, these are the most cosmopolitan human beings you will ever meet from all sorts of different backgrounds. And you meet all sorts of talented people, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like the average person who lives in New York City is above average in many aspects compared to, let's say, some people who live elsewhere.
And I'm Pennsylvania.
Not trying, in Pennsylvania. I'm not trying to throw shade on other parts, right? But like, if
no
you,
shade
if,
on
if you talk to like an average dude who lives in New York,
yeah,
all right, who's 24 years old, who grew up here,
yeah,
that dude has got stories. That dude can
been
keep you
some shit.
That dude can keep you entertained.
Yeah,
that dude can tell you some stuff.
Uh-huh.
Not always the case with someone who's 24 years old who grew up somewhere else in the States. You know what I mean? So it's a very rich place in terms of experience.
Mm.
One thing you notice about New Yorkers is they got stories and they got experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's regardless of age. And the older dudes can tell you all sorts of stuff, right? So that's what I like. I like
especially if they ride the subway.
That's right.
Yeah.
The people who come here, the students that have come here, that have trained here, that's the biggest asset we have. Like just like the amazing people I've been able to meet from teaching and that's my favorite part. Everything else about actually running a business in New York is a freaking pain in the ass. All right? I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. All right? That being a business owner in New York is a pain in the ass.
Oh,
all right? And it's not easy here. It's cutthroat. All right? But we've done it for 20 years. Mm. So we're still here.
All right. Man, we breezing right through. I'm almost out of questions.
Oh, jeez.
We breezing through.
Oh, no.
This is rare.
All right.
He's one and done's.
That's right.
All right, Sandro Castro.
All right.
Cool name, Sandro Castro. Hi, the Kung Fu Genius. Oh, and my bad, man. Hi, the Kung Fu Genius.
Okay.
Exclamation point, right?
All right,
great podcast. You are able to speak and understand Cantonese. Just so you know.
So.
Yeah. Does it make a great impact on your understanding of Wing Chun? Wing Chun? W-C-H-U-N and W-T-S-U-N.
Uh-huh.
Also, can you share some good reads about the Kun-Kutz?
Kun-Kutz?
With K's, spelled with K's. Yeah, yeah. Kun-Kutz.
Yeah, cute.
Shout out to the other members of the KFG podcast.
Yo.
Talk about Andrew. All right,
No.
Guy who actually edits this, he's the one that does the real work. He's to edit all your hot nonsense.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Well, obviously, learning Chinese and learning Cantonese has been a huge help in teaching it because, you know, for people who practice Chinese martial arts, we have a lot of, there's a lot of mystical nonsense that, you know, that kind of gets packaged into doing Chinese martial arts. And a big part of it has to do with the fact that the aspects of the Chinese culture that are a little bit mystical, or at least to outsiders, it's a little exotic, a little strange. And so learning the language is one of the first things you can do to demystify a lot of that nonsense, because it's not really that mystical. Unfortunately, Chinese martial arts in the Western world is kind of mired by lots of snake oil salesmen trying to sell shit to Westerners who just don't know any better, right?
Yeah.
And so they will go like, you know, like making up forms and making up names and making up all this kind of stuff. And like you tell it to some Chinese person, sells this thing to a non-Chinese person, they're going to eat it up right away. And so Chinese martial arts, unfortunately, has suffered at the hands of a lot of people who are kind of selling stuff. And so learning Chinese has been a great way to kind of cut through that. When I started learning Cantonese, obviously the first words that I was most concerned about learning were all the martial arts stuff, you know, the terminology, the names, the sayings, all that kind of stuff. And one thing that's interesting when you start learning what those Chinese words actually mean is that it's not mystical at all, especially the Wing Chun sayings, which are actually called sum fa. Sum is heart, fa is like method. Those are the mottos. The kun kut are actually just the chops. Like Sifu Moy, the late Sifu Moy Yat, took the traditional Wing Chun sayings and he put them on, I believe, either stone or wood, and he made these carvings. Those carvings are what are known as kun kut. Kut, like the actual engravings. But that doesn't mean sayings. It's literally the chops, the blocks that he put them on, right? The sayings are actually called sum fat, which is like the heart methods or the main points. And when you start learning those and what those Chinese words actually mean, you realize that many of them are nothing more than like what a boxing coach might tell their student,
right?
Or might tell their trainee. But because it's in Chinese, it sounds a lot more mystical, or it sounds a lot more formal or something like that. So when you start learning these things, you realize these are basically just instructions from our ancestors telling us to fight a certain way, to keep a certain attitude, to do this with your elbow, to do this when someone attacks you in this certain way. And that they're actually very common sense sayings. So by learning Chinese, you realize that it's really nothing mystical about any of this stuff. It's just hard work and practice.
Oh, okay, cool. All right. Yeah. No, yeah. That makes perfect sense. Right. Okay, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so got another one.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Kay Schmidt. Sounds very European.
Yes.
But
there's different types of European. There's like the Germans, and then there's like that accent you're making up right now. There's like that type.
Yeah, I'm not European.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm born bred here, mate. You can hear it.
I get it. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right, anyway.
You're from downtown New York.
So far downtown.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway, so what is, in your opinion, Four Corners Wing Chun? Did Lung Ting teach that?
No, I don't really know anything about Four Corners Wing Chun. I mean, is that a style of Wing Chun? Is that a Wing Chun theory? There are some Wing Chun people that teach something called the Four Gate Theory, which is kind of zone defense. Obviously, if you look at some of Bruce Lee's notes, he's got the kind of the four, the quadrants and defending the different quadrants and stuff. So are we talking about the four corners in front of our body for zone defense? I do know that there was a so-called Four Directions Siunim Tao that was taught by some lineage in Fatsan, because Siva Leung Ting told me about this. And man, this was totally crazy. He went to Fatsan, you know, the town that Ip Man is from, and yeah, you know, where Wing Chun kind of became famous. And he the guys in Fatsan were very funny, the Wing Chun guys. And this is like back in the 80s, because obviously a lot of the Wing Chun guys in Fatsan, many of them obviously come from thoroughbred lineages, because Wing Chun is from Fatsan. So you have the Leung Chan guys and the Chan Ma Shan guys there. But then Ip Man, which is like one guy who learned there, goes to Hong Kong and then becomes uber famous.
Mm.
So even though you obviously have a lot of very credentialed Wing Chun people in Fatsan, I also think you got a lot of sour grapes Wing Chun people in Fatsan who are kind of like, how come that one Yip Man guy got to be famous? Because we're really the ones that have this, right? So in the 80s, I know there was like a delegation of Yip Man students who came from Hong Kong to Fatsan to go back to their roots and visit Fatsan. And so some of the local Wing Chun guys there, I feel that they had a little, some of them, not all of them, some of them had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, like, oh, well, you Hong Kong guys don't know this, and you Hong Kong guys don't know that. And so they would just make up kind of arbitrary things to show, like, see, Yip Man never showed you the secret wooden fist form, and that's the, you know, that's the thing you really need to make your Wing Chun complete or whatever, right?
That's what's missing, bro.
So that's what's missing. Yeah. You know the reason why you can't fight well is because you're missing a form.
It's because you're Hong Kong.
Yeah, yeah. You're missing pantomiming movements in the air is the reason why you're not able to fight better, okay? So there was one Wing Chun Sifu there. I don't remember what lineage. I remember Sifu Leung Ting told me the story because he like it was so funny and it happened so long ago. You know a story is good when it happened a real long time ago, and when you tell it, you just start cracking up again, like you're there. He was cracking up when he told me this story, so I can only imagine that when it happened, it must have just been crazy, right? Yeah. I don't think I'm going to tell it in a way that's really that funny, but you can maybe understand the absurdity of it. While Leung Ting was in China with some of the other Wing Chun people, I assume, one of the local Fatsan Wing Chun people goes up to them and says, you know, Yip Man only learned one direction Wing Chun. And so all of you Hong Kong guys only know one direction Wing Chun.
Hmm.
But here in Fatsan, we teach all four directions. And then, of course, everyone is intrigued, right? Which at first you're kind of like, four directional. I mean, like, look, Wing Chun, you put your hands up. If your opponent's in front of you, you face your opponent. But if your opponent gets to the side or you have movements there, if your opponent's behind you, you turn. It's like, well, I think I understand how to fight in all four directions. Right, like, I'm not going to be doing back kicks, but if someone's behind me, I'm going to turn and face them. Right? What does it mean, four directions? What the hell is that, right?
Oh, no.
And then so he's like, yeah, Yip Man only learned one, when he left China, he had only learned one direction of Wing Chun, but we have all four directions, okay? And I'm going to demonstrate it for you so you can see it for the first time, because he's showing them like the error of their Hong Kong ways.
Okay.
Like, I'm going to show you the real shit.
Show me,
and
homie.
You're lucky to even see the real shit.
Oh, goodness.
And this Sifu, all right? Hey, when Sifu Leung Ting told me the story, you could just see he just starts smiling. Right? The guy does he sets the stance. And he goes, I'm going to show you the four directions Siunam Tao form. He sets the stance, proceeds to do the Siunam Tao form, and finishes.
Mm-hmm.
And then turns 90 degrees, sets the stance again, and does the form again. Finishes the form, turns another 90 degrees, sets the stance, and does the form again, and does it for a total of four times, and says, see, four direction Wing Chun. If there's someone who missed the concept of how Wing Chun works, that you don't literally need to face your Siunam Tao in all directions to know how to use those in the directions you're going to be fighting in,
no,
right?
I'm sorry, that's got to be a joke.
No,
it's not, is it? It's just...
That's,
well, no. Think about it. These guys in China, especially in the 80s, it's pre-internet, and even now, internet in China is not always that great. So what do they hear? They hear things, right? And they never probably had even really seen what the Hong Kong guys were doing.
Right.
Or the fact that the Hong Kong Wing Chun was forged on a reputation of fighting, not a reputation of what forms you know or anything like that, right? And there, they got this like, yeah, but like, look, they're Siunam Tao. They only do it one way. And then they make stuff up because basically these are country bumpkins. I mean, like, they're trying to snub their nose at the city slickers coming from Hong Kong. And like, let me show you city slickers, which you guys don't know. We have the four direction Siunam Tao form, and proceeds to do the Siunam Tao form in four separate directions.
Now, second part of that question is, did Leung Ting teach that?
No, he just told the story. How stupid that was. All right. if that's the same thing. Again, is it the four corners zone defense thing? This is basic Wing Chun theory. Is it Seigok from the long pole? Mm-hmm. Because in the long pole, we have Yat Xin Leng Yi San Pun Seigok, which is the parameters of how we fight with the pole. One line, two extremes, three levels, four corners. Mm-hmm. Is it that theory? That theory has to do with long pole, not with fist fighting. So people write the four corners. Four corners what? All right, zone defense, four corners style, four corners what? All right, man, it's too vague.
It's four corners to every story.
That's four corners to every story. Not all of them are equally legit, though.
No.
Sometimes three corners are full of shit. Sometimes you only need the one corner.
Oh god, and they're all not 90 degrees.
That's
either.
Right.
Oh god.
Can you imagine that? That's doing great. The Sihanouk Tao form, stopping, turning 90 degrees, setting the stance again, and doing the same damn form again, and doing that for a total of four times, and then claiming that is secret revealed knowledge that only you have.
But just imagine the people that actually looked at that and were just like,
yeah. Oh man, that's mind blowing.
Sat there and watched
it. Guarantee, no, you know who buys that shit? Westerners.
Yeah.
You know, the Westerners go to places like Fatsan and some unscrupulous snake oil salesman over there will be like, I will teach you the real Wing Chun that even Yip Man didn't know, and tell them all this stuff. And the Westerner goes back to their country going like, oh, I learned the real shit in China.
Wow.
All right. Well, how do you know? Because Chinese guy showed it to me.
Yeah.
All right. And there you go. And all they were was taken advantage of. That's it.
Damn it.
Yeah.
Got the four corners of their pockets.
That's right.
All right. Next up. Butcher Wing 100.
That's what's up.
All right.
Because 99 other Butcher Wings were already taken.
Why you let me say it?
Huh?
Why you let me say it?
Because that's my line.
Can you please...
Come up with your own material.
I know, right? Can you please discuss, all right?
Oh, God.
Can you please discuss... I don't know,
William Chang, right? Yeah, is it William Chang again?
Don't. This is not a question. This is say some shit time.
Say some shit.
Can you please discuss iron palm and hand conditioning that Bruce worked on with James Lee? How did it increase his power, and is it now overlooked, as I don't think he ever spoke about it openly, but his power clearly benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks in advance.
Well, the thing is, we don't really know, all right? So James Yim Lee, who became one of Bruce Lee's, probably the first student of Bruce Lee in Oakland, and I think Bruce even lived with him for a little bit.
Wrote that book with him?
He wrote that book with him later. But before Bruce met James Yim Lee, I think James Yim Lee already wrote a book about, I think it was about iron palm conditioning,
mm-hmm.
which really means... breaking shit, okay?
Yeah.
So iron, and again, this is one of those topics like death touch and iron palm and qigong and stuff like that, that the moment I say anything about it, there's going to be 100 iron palm experts who are going to come and be like, well, no, actually iron palm is this, or actually iron palm is that. And the problem is none of them can agree with each other, so actually it doesn't really matter. The broad strokes of iron palm, all right, is, that sounds weird, the strokes of iron palm. All right, take that out of context.
The broad
strokes. Is basically you train and you condition your hand to the point where you can smash hard objects with it, all right? So perhaps one of the most famous treaties on iron palm is the Li Ying Arn, or Li Arn Ying, I think it's Li Ying Arn book, Iron Palm in 100 Days.
Oh,
it was a book that came out in the 60s.
You had this book.
I had this book.
Yeah.
All right.
You still have it.
I still have it, yes.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. I didn't get it in the 60s, though. Okay. Right? No, man, I have everything. I have everything. I'm such a nerd when it comes to books, right? And that book, obviously some Iron Palm masters are going to say, well, it takes obviously much longer to get to Iron Palm than 100 days, but it's essentially the preliminary training. And basically what you do is you use a kind of like a small wall bag, a little canvas bag. And then as your hand conditioning improves, you know, you start off with something softer in there like rice and then sand and then beans. And then eventually, you know, you have BBs in there. And then eventually you have razor blades and bullets and grenades and the hopes and souls of small children and stuff. You have all sorts of stuff in there until you can smash whatever, right? And it's basically a sequence of hand conditioning, right? So, for example, usually you put it on a small table that's similar to a pedestal, so it's got a slight angle, and you raise your hand and you let gravity kind of drop your hand, so your hand is smashing into this target. And you do the palm heel and the back of the hand and the ridge and the fingertips and the four knuckles and the fist and the hammer fist. And it's usually like a series of about 8 moves or so, and you just repeat it like a psychopath. Boom, 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 right? And you just keep doing it, bam, 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 and you keep hitting it.
Okay.
And as your conditioning improves, you add more power, you increase the hardness of what's ever in the bag. And of course, you have to use lots of tita chao to make sure that your, you know, hands are not getting too inflamed and keep the skin and everything strong. And as you are developing this conditioning, you are also increasing your striking power, which is the theory. And your hand is able to hit things that are very hard. All right. There are some schools of martial arts that believe only in training the iron palm on your dominant hand. I think actually back to Wai Hong and Tak Wai Eng, I think the iron palm that they teach is only on your dominant hand. But other people do it on both hands. And so then the real test, once you've done this iron palm training on the bag, is can you break stuff with your hand? You know, obviously pieces of wood and stone and these kind of things, right? Bricks and things like that. And so it's essentially a training routine to develop really hard hands for smashing stuff. And James Yim Lee was big into smashing stuff. He was a big, like, in iron palm, and he would train. He would smash shit all the time, right? And so the story was that when Bruce was in Oakland, James Yim Lee showed him some of this stuff, all right? But I think that, again, I think people always overstate how much things influence another martial artist. Like, as if Bruce's number one takeaway from, as if the iron palm training, that was the thing that made Bruce have a powerful punch.
Oh.
And Bruce just seemed to me, as someone who kind of like, he'll see something and he wants to learn it, like he'll obsess about something, he'll figure it out, and then he'll move on. If you look at Bruce Lee's hands, he went through periods where his knuckles were really almost deformed, like he had barnacles on them, but it was always the bottom three knuckles from Wing Chun. And sometimes he wouldn't do, his hands wouldn't look like that at all. So you would look, there was like, it was kind of like ups and downs, right?
All right.
But if you looked at his hands, he didn't look like he had the hands of someone who trained iron palm. His bottom three knuckles would be chewed up and barnacle-like on occasion if he was doing a lot of wall bag. But in general, if you looked at Bruce Lee's hands, he didn't look like he had iron. People who really train iron palm usually have kind of fat, thick palms. And then because basically their hands are kind of inflamed all the time because you're beating the shit out of your hands. So you have inflammation in your hands, all right? So you have kind of knobby-looking hands.
All right.
So Bruce did not look like he had those kind of hands. So I don't think, you know, it's like people saying like, well, Judo Jean LaBelle taught Bruce all this judo, and yet somehow Bruce was not really focusing on that stuff in his Jeet Kune Do training. So it's like, why is he learning all this shit and not using it? Well, Bruce learned all this iron palm stuff from James Yim Lee and still didn't make it part of his Jeet Kune Do curriculum.
Okay.
So for me, it's always like, I think if Bruce really felt that something had a lot of worth, it somehow made it into the Jeet Kune Do curriculum. Although there are people who are going to say, well, Bruce was only using his students as training dummies and wasn't really caring about teaching them anything. I mean, of course, look, you can spin this stuff any way you want. But I don't think that Bruce's so-called iron palm training with James Yim Lee was something that, like, after he had, like, figured it out, was something that he already, he put it in that old storage bin in the back where I had my William Chung stories, right? At some point, it's like, okay, I've done that.
Cobwebs.
You know, it was like, I talked about like the rattan rings, those stupid rattan rings, right? I bought the Randy Williams video and showed myself how to use it. And there I was in front of the mirror flipping and doing Quan Saos and Gan Saos and Cow Pecs and looking like a pro. And then I was like, all right, well, I'm done with this thing, right?
Okay. Novelty.
If I had taken a photo of me with that rattan ring and let's say I croak now, and 10 years from now, this photo comes out, they'll be like, so what kind of influence did the rattan ring have on Sifu Richter's teaching career? Because here, he's clearly training with a rattan ring.
He's clearly.
You see what I mean? So
clearly a master of it.
Well, I mean, but like, that's the problem. There's a photo of me using it. Let's say there was a photo because I used it at one time.
Uh-huh.
After that, I thought it was the least important thing I had ever spent any time on in my martial arts career. Put it on the shelf where it's been collecting dust ever since. But then 50 years from now, someone unearths a photo and they're like doing a podcast on, let's talk about the influence of the rattan ring on Sivu Richter's teaching career. All right. And I have a feeling that so much Bruce Lee shit is like that. All right.
Man.
Someone, a karate guy showed Bruce Lee some kind of kick or something that Bruce liked. And then Bruce like tried it a couple times and got into it and knew it. And all right, fine. Boom. That's in his toolkit. He goes on to the next thing. And then we're going to relitigate that that one karate kick that he saw that he liked is now the most important thing that Bruce Lee ever did. Mm. All right. When you look at Bruce's training, he seemed to hit a lot of heavy bags. And he did some hand conditioning stuff with his fingers and hitting the wall bag and stuff like that. But for the most part, he was wearing bag gloves and hitting a heavy bag. So he didn't take excessive amounts of pictures of him doing that kind of iron palm stuff, a couple photos where he's like sticking his finger in the sand or something like that or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he did some of that stuff. But I don't think you would say like the secret to Bruce Lee's explosiveness or to his ability to punch people, you know, in the inch punch, very close range and hit them with a lot of power was because of his iron palm. Because of some iron palm training he did in the early 60s with James M. Lee. That was the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. Like people want to pretend that Phuc Yeung was the guy who really taught Bruce Lee everything. Right. I think people highly overstate the influence that someone has on someone else, especially if that person had only knew them for a short time.
Wow.
Yep.
All right.
What else we got?
We got Anton Rasha.
Nice.
Okay. Kung Fu Genius. What do you think about the movie Dragon, the Bruce Lee story?
Oh, Jesus. We've talked about this a couple times on this
couple
podcast.
Couple times. All yeah, right. When?
Well, it's come up every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
It has.
Yeah.
You don't remember, of course, because you've already mashed anything I've said about it with other things.
With the iron palm. You smashed it.
It didn't actually come up on the podcast. It came up at that party in Hong Kong with Johnny Gill.
Oh, right. Yeah, the Johnny Gill Hong Kong party. Yeah, right, yeah. The one that 50 Cent showed up to.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Yes.
Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
Yeah, great movie.
It's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch it without any idea about what... If you don't know what the real Bruce Lee story is...
Yeah.
And it's a good popcorn.
Total novice.
Yeah. It's a good popcorn movie. I mean, I remember I saw the movie in the theater when it came out in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I knew a little bit about Bruce Lee because I'd read some articles and I knew some stuff about him. And I remember even reading that I knew some things
mm-hmm.
were not accurate. I knew that I already, in 93, I already knew that he hurt his back weightlifting. He didn't hurt his back, but he kicked in the dungeon by Wong Jack Man who had a jerry curl, all right? I knew that wasn't real, right? So so even when I saw it in 93, I wasn't a complete Bruce Lee novice. I knew some things were in there. Even 93, I mean, I was 14, 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize that it's a movie and it's supposed to be entertaining, but I actually quite liked it because I was a huge Bruce Lee fan, and they're talking about Bruce Lee. It's Bruce Lee's life. All like it's a great movie, right?
Yeah,
it's entertaining. I think it's pretty well written. And then I get older, and I learn more and more about Bruce Lee, and I learn more about Chinese culture, and I learn more about the history of Wing Chun and all this kind of stuff. And I go to Hong Kong more often. And then I go, ugh, it's another stupid Hollywood portrayal of Asian culture.
Huh.
You know, the Yip Man character, like, you know, they didn't even have the balls to have them speak with subtitles, speak Cantonese with subtitles mm-hmm. when they're in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Everyone speaks English.
Everyone.
Which already pisses me off. Yip Man speaks English, and Yip Man inexplicably practices with a Tai Chi sword later when he comes back to visit him, right? And so... You see some of that stuff and like, you know, the playing up the whole curse on his family thing and Yip Man, you know, has that quote with like, you know, about whether your life is you know, tragedy or success or whatever. You know how many people have put that on memes as actual Yip Man quotes?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's why. On my Kung Fu Genius Instagram a few weeks ago, I posted actual Yip Man quotes from his new Martial Hero magazine interviews. Because when I go on Instagram and I look at these so-called Yip Man quotes, dude, that shit's from Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. And the funny thing is I every once in a while I commented on some of those Instagram posts.
Yeah.
that posted that. And I go, you know that this is actually a direct quote from Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
Yeah.
And then they'll go like, well, how do you know? And then I'll post them like the quote. They'll go, no, how do you know that he didn't say that? And I go, because this is, because first of all, the quote that you put on your meme is the direct word for word from Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Okay, so that's already one thing that makes it kind of suspicious.
Yeah.
And this was written by these script writers who were not even Chinese, certainly didn't know Yip Man. Which also makes it a little suspicious that they probably just made up the quote, right? And the other thing is, too, it's a total bullshit faux philosophical quote that only Americans could write. You would never say this shit in Chinese.
Oh, man.
So that's the other thing, too. Yip Man didn't speak English.
Yeah.
So already the quote not being in Chinese is already a problem. All right? So, but the funny thing is, like, people are like, no, what, how do you know? And it's like, dude, I just showed you. It's a quote from the movie. Well, how do you know Yip Man didn't say it? I go, your proof is how do I know? No. You're making a claim that Yip Man said this. The burden of proof rests on the person making the claim.
Okay.
It's not like people don't under. They always say, well, how do you know Yip Man didn't say it? No. Homie. Listen up.
Show me, homie.
You're the one claiming Yip Man said this. The burden of proof rests on you. To prove that Yip Man said
trying
this.
To put the burden on you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They shift the burden of proof. This is very, very common. People say this all the time. Well, how do you know he didn't learn from this guy secretly? How do you know he did? No. you don't get to play tennis without the net.
Yeah.
That's not how this works. Okay?
Yeah.
All right?
Wow.
You want to prove that Yip Man said it. Show me where that quote is coming from. Now, if you say one of his students said Yip Man said it, well, then even there, you're not talking about a direct quote. But if you could say, Choi Sheng-Tin said in this interview that Yip Man said this, you would go, okay.
Okay.
Like, there at least someone who knew him said that he said that.
Yeah.
But the only proof of this quote existing is that it's directly transcribed from Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. I don't think it's an actual Yip Man quote, all right? Plus, I don't think Yip Man talked that way. You know what's funny? In the Wing Chun Athletic Association, which was Yip Man's school in Hong Kong, this is there. I showed you guys that, but I don't think we went in when we went, right?
We weren't able to go upstairs.
There was no one there that day, right? Well, if you go in there.
Got to see the iron doors, though.
Yeah. You see, they have the big couplets there, all right? That were gifts from Tang Sang, but I think Wong Shanang might have done the calligraphy, although I don't know. Maybe he didn't do it. I think Wong Shanang did the calligraphy on the Yip Man poster, though, like the one we have here. But I think the one at the Wing Chun Athletic Association, I don't know, it could be wrong. I know it was a gift from Tang Sang because they're on wood. It's like engravings, right?
Okay.
And it says Wing Chun Tong, Wing Chun Hall, and then it has the two couplets on the side. Well, if you look in the middle, there are a list of sayings in there. And it's about conduct, how a martial artist should conduct themselves. And it says stuff like, a martial artist should abstain from sexual desires. A martial artist should abstain from these kind of thoughts and all this stuff. And it comes off very religious and very pious. Hmm. You know what I mean? And there are all these lines. Like, and it's very like, you practice your form daily and keep your thoughts pure. It's like shit like that, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying that any of that stuff is bad or whatever, but it's like very preachy when you translate it, right? And I remember Leung Tang, one of them was like, something about like sexual desires or something like that. And I thought this thing was kind of cool because I'm like, oh, it's in the Wing Chun Athletic Association. It's like these things to be an upright martial artist or whatever. So I printed them in Chinese.
Okay.
And I put them in my school. All right. And this was in the early days of the Kung Fu Jin. This is before I knew shits. All right.
Oh, no.
If I'd known what any of them meant, I wouldn't have come and joined.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, no.
And Leung Tang came for a seminar.
Yeah.
And he saw that on the wall. And he said, what the shit is this? All right. And I said, oh, aren't these posted in the Wing Chun Athletic Association?
Yeah.
He says, yes, but it's not from Yip Man.
No.
Because they put that later or that was put, but he said, that's not from Yip Man. And he goes, and he looks at me and he goes, Yip Man was nothing like that. And then, like, I didn't think much of it, right? Uh-huh. And I thought, like, maybe Leung Ting is in error. Maybe that thing has been in there for a long time. And maybe Leung Ting doesn't want to believe it or something like that. Right? Although he was the chief instructor for the Wing Chun Athletic Association in the late 60s. So Leung Ting would know the shit that was on the wall at the Wing Chun Athletic Association, right? So, but he was like, what is this? He goes, that is not from Yip Man. And he goes, Yip Man is nothing like that. If you know Yip Man's character, then he will not put this shit on the wall, right? And then recently, in that Wong Sun Leung book I was reading, there someone in there, I think it was Rusper Patel, who was one of Wong Sun Leung's students. He said something like, yeah, someone mentioned those things to Wong Sifu. And they were like, yeah, no, that's just something some people put up later. It's the more pious students of Yip Man put that up there or whatever, right? To maybe to give Wing Chun a more Shaolin monk kind of feel to it or whatever. But, you know, but again, that's the problem is that you would go to the Wing Chun Athletic Association not knowing and you would see these like pious rules of conduct and everything like that. And you would think these are the laws and rules that Yip Man obeyed or whatever. And that shit was just put up by some of his students after he died.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to sound holier than thou, right? And so please tell me how you get these Yip Man quotes, right? So that's why on my Instagram, I put actual Yip Man quotes from the new Martial Hero magazine. Like, shit Yip Man really said. Obviously, he originally said it in Chinese and we translated it into English, but these are actual Yip Man quotes. So Dragon the Bruce Lee story has done a bit to confuse some things, like with the Yip Man quotes.
Okay.
And again, I thought Jason Scott Lee did a good job because playing Bruce Lee or any iconic person is no easy task, I think, for an actor. And I think instead of him just doing a Bruce Lee imitation, he played the role the way he wanted to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was admirable. But yeah, it's kind of ridiculous and it plays into a lot of Asian stereotypes, even when it purports to be a bit anti-racist. I feel that it the portrayal of Asians within that movie is kind of ridiculous.
Okay.
Except for Jason Scott Lee, but there are other things like the actor who played his father and stuff like that. I just thought it was very, I don't know. It was just the shades of Charlie Chan in there. It just felt a little ugh. And it did try to have an anti-racism message, which was, you know, quite forward thinking for 93. But I think in other ways, it kind of missed the mark in the actual portrayal of Chinese people. But, you know, I think every Bruce Lee fan has to see it so they can bitch about it.
right.
You know, interesting, Nancy Kwan is in it. Nancy Kwan basically plays the Ruby Chow-like figure. I don't think they actually called her Ruby Chow. But funny thing is, Nancy Kwan actually knew Bruce Lee in real life.
Okay.
So that was kind of a funny cameo in there.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I do remember that scene.
Yeah.
With the fight.
Yeah.
In that yard.
Yep. So, do we have any other questions?
All right. Next up, we got Steve Strutt.
That's what's up. Longtime fan. He's always around.
All right. Thank you. And what is the benefit of a super slow third sentence in Sunum Tao? I believe it's third set.
Yeah.
In Sunum Tao.
Uh-huh. Got the that's the sequence with the Tan Sao and the Wu Sao and the Fuk Sao. So the third set in the Sunum Tao form. Now, again, different Wing Chun lineages divide the form up differently. Some divide the Sunum Tao into three parts. Mm-hmm. So they consider all of that part of part one. We divide it into eight sets. So basically, every time you retract the hands, that's the end of a set. So that's the third set, the way we count it.
Mm-hmm.
The third set is done slowly because there's an emphasis on low elbow power. And because we have two of our three seed techniques in there, two of our low elbow seed techniques, namely the Tan Sao and the Fuk Sao, we want to focus on lowering the elbow and sending it forward for developing that idea of constant forward pressure. So there are elements of elbow power, and also when you slow things down, that gives you time to focus on things like shoulder position. Make sure you're staying square rather than turning your shoulder a little bit because it's done with one arm. So by slowing things down, it allows you to pay attention to some vital details in Wing Chun, namely Cham Chang Lok Bok, sinking elbow, dropping shoulder, which is super vital to good Wing Chun. So the slow practice allows you to do that. There's also another aspect there where you can integrate your breathing, not breathing timed with the movements, just you slow your breathing down and keep a very even breathing rhythm, which adds a little bit of difficulty because you also have to focus on the movements. So there's a bit of a mental aspect because to a certain degree, it actually becomes kind of boring.
Mm.
And so you'll find like halfway through on the first arm, after you've been doing it slow, you realize, man, I still have one more fuxao to go on this arm and I still haven't even started the other side. So you have this internal dialogue that's going like, eh, why don't you just speed it up a little bit? All right, just speed up that last fuxao so you can get to the other side and get that thing done with, right? So what ends up happening is by slowing it down, it's kind of boring. It's kind of, it drags on the mind a little bit. And so it's basically a shit test for yourself, all right? This is one of the reasons why we do it. Obviously, the aforementioned low elbow power, all that stuff's kind of primary, but this kind of secondary reason of adding a little bit of institutionalized boredom to practicing it, where you almost want to like speed it up to get it over with, that is a shit test for yourself, for Dao Sam or fighting heart. Can you, regardless of how boring it is, continue to stick out this third set at the same pace, even when you have one more fuxao to go on the first side? So you've already been doing it for a while, you're still not done, and you haven't even started the other side yet. That's where everyone starts to go, oh crap. It's before that last fuxao on the first side, because they're still not done with the first side. They've already been doing it for a long time, and they haven't even started the second side yet. And so the question is, are you going to speed up? Are you going to do it in fewer breath cycles? Are you going to try to do it a little bit faster just for the sake of getting it done? Or are you going to keep the same disciplined pace throughout the entire thing? Whether sweat is dripping in your eye, you're not going to stop to wipe your eye, you're going to keep going. Can you push through it? Because if you can't, that means you're easily defeated by your own thoughts. And if you cannot defeat yourself, how can you defeat an enemy in front of you? And that's the deeper lesson. And that's all I got to say about that. All right, everyone. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode of The Kung Fu Genius. As always, don't forget to like this video, subscribe to The Kung Fu Genius, turn on those notifications, and comment below any questions you want us to answer on a future episode. And I'll see you guys next time. Word is I'm a Kung Fu Genius. Technique speaks for me, not lineage. Forget Jet Li, cause I'm the one. Many call me Sifu, but to you I'm Seagung. And I produce masters, you surpassed us. Your Kung Fu stiffer than corpse and caskets. City Wing Chun is the house I built. Violate the gate and your blood gets spilt. Alex Richter, always the victor. Of course. Yeah, well, obviously, learning Chinese and learning Cantonese has been a huge... just don't know any better, right?
Yeah. All right, peeps. On today's episode of The Kung Fu Genius, the genius will be answering all sorts of hot nonsense from YouTube. Lots of gems, lots of William Chung in Kansas, and lots of, you know, that Yip Man quote was from Bruce Lee, The Dragon Story, right?
It was supposed to be the other way around.
You did it, Dre. You did it. I can't believe you did.
Messing around, and I kept messing around
Bruce
with
Lee,
it.
The Dragon Story.
That's from Bruce Lee, The Dragon Story, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's try this again, huh?
You got it, Sifu.
Yeah.
All right, peeps.
Dre,
stop.
I gotta teach.
Stop.
I've gotta teach.
I don't need the googies. I don't need the googies.
Sure?
The giggles. I don't need the giggles right now.
You're making me laugh.
Stop.
As you do,
yeah, sorry. You're trying to make me laugh.
No, I'm not doing the same. You know what I mean?
Get it together. Get it together.
Gotta teach. Wow, that was amazing. That was amazing.
All right, thank you, Sifu.
Cool. What do you think, Mikey?
It was amazing.